Okay, welcome to Atlanta, everyone. It's the capital of the state of Georgia in the United States. We're at the World Georgia Congress Center right now at the 63rd iteration of the American Society of Hematology. We're going to be talking about diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and the advent of the CAR T-cell therapy with regard to that treatment.
Welcome to this special edition podcast. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and today I'm going to take you through a bit of a journey that started in Atlanta, like that previous recording was just saying, and we're going to talk to several experts about the developments in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and CAR T-cell therapies that was very exciting at the American Society of Hematology in 2021. And as Frederick Locke liked to say...
Yeah, it's a really exciting time.
It is. Enjoy listening.
Thank you to our healthcare workers for your continued sacrifice and dedication to the community.
Let's start off by talking about the unmet need. We ran into Professor Michael Bishop from the University of Chicago in the hallway and asked him what he thought of that.
So in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, there is a subset of patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma who unfortunately either do not respond to frontline therapy or relapse very, very early thereafter. We define that as 12 months. And for that group of patients, they tend to have very poor prognosis. The standard of care in this situation would be to give them a second-line treatment, such as R-ICE, and try to get them to an autologous stem cell transplantation, but just a small minority of those patients are able to go on to autologous stem cell transplant and even derive benefit if they can. As such, there is a significant unmet need for better treatments for this patient subset. So CAR T-cells, and specifically tisagen lucel, has been demonstrated in patients with more advanced non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. After two or more lines of therapy, patients can derive long-term benefit. And so our hypothesis was, why can't we move this into an earlier line of therapy, specifically targeting this high-risk population who has progressive disease within 12 months of treatment?
At the American Society of Hematology, there were three phase three trials that were presented. They were called the TRANSFORM, the ZUMA-7, and the BLENDA trials, and they compared the efficacy and safety of CAR T-cell therapies to standard of care for the second-line treatment of patients with early relapsed refractory B-cell non-Hodgkin lymphoma. The BLENDA trial included 322 patients to compare tisagen lucel with the standard of care. The TRANSFORM trial included 184 patients to test lisocabtagene maraleucel against the standard of care, and the ZUMA-7 trial assessed the efficacy of axicabtagene ciloleucel compared to the standard of care in 359 patients. So the three trials had some important differences. The three CAR T therapies that were used differed on both the co-stimulatory portion of the chimeric antigen receptor, which is crucial for the T cell activity, and the process by which T cells were genetically engineered. Secondly, to counter slow disease progression during the manufacturing process, the BLENDA trial and the TRANSFORM trial allowed for one or more rounds of bridging chemotherapy. The trial design of ZUMA-7 did not allow for bridging chemotherapy, and as a consequence, sicker patients could be included in the BLENDA and TRANSFORM trials. And we had the opportunity to speak with three prominent key opinion leaders in this field. Professor Locke from the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. Professor Marie-José Kerstens from the University of Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And Professor Gilles Saul from the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. Professor Saul kicks off by giving us some of the background to these studies.
Yes, this is a field that really emerged in the last decade, and it's only 4 years ago that we saw really the initial result of the phase two study that led to provide to the community of patients this new form of therapy. A couple of phase two studies were run with different products that we'll call, to simplify, axi-cel, tisa-cel, and liso-cel. And the results have shown that in patients with highly refractory disease, failing two or three more forms of therapy, these patients were responding to a single infusion of this genetically engineered T-cell, and that a substantial number of patients achieved a CR, a complete response, and that for those patients that achieve a CR, the CR appeared durable. So the landmark study, the first one to be presented, was ZUMA-1 with Dr. Locke as an essential contributor, showing an overall response rate in the range of 80%, with 58% of the patient reaching a CR, and clearly about 80% of these patients were maintaining the CR for a prolonged period. A second study was called the Juliet study. It was a little bit more complicated with an inclusion and a delay in the manufacturing of the cell. The overall response rate was in the range of 53%, if I recall well, with a little bit more than 40% of the patient reaching a CR. And again, 80% or so of the patients that reached a CR had maintained. And the Transcend study, the more recent one, presented similar results. So this was really a hope, and these drugs are now available for our patients in the United States, in Europe, and in other countries. And they represent in the third line setting, after having failed first line therapy, second line therapy, including patients that failed auto transplant, really a new hope for these patients. So based on that, there was obviously the first question, was this data reproducible outside of this clinical trial? And we have seen a couple of so-called real-world studies that came up from the US consortium at ASH 2 years ago, and more recently from some European countries, such as UK and France in particular, showing that, yes, these results were essentially reproducible. There were more patients with advanced disease, with a lower performance status, that were in these studies, and also some delays of manufacturing in some countries or initiations of CAR-T therapy that may explain some results that were a little bit lower from some of the pivotal trial, but overall the response here is here. The toxicity was reproducible, and we were eager to see how, based on this result, we can bring this form of therapy earlier in the management of our patients.
Which brings us to the second line trials that were presented at this meeting. Professor Locke, do you mind?
Yeah, no, I think one of the big splashes here at the ASH annual meeting here this year is the presentation of the three different randomized clinical trials testing out those three CAR T-cell therapies that are approved for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And those three trials are the ZUMA-7 trial, which is testing out axicabtagene ciloleucel in second line as compared to the standard. The TRANSFORM trial, which is testing out lysicabtagene, maraleucel, in the second line against the standard of care. And then finally, the BELINDA trial, which is testing out tisagen lecleucel in the second line, randomized to standard of care. And what's important to understand is that the standard of care for the last 30 years, the second line treatment for a large B-cell lymphoma, has been combination chemotherapy. And for those patients that respond to combination chemotherapy, they have a partial response or complete response to get consolidated with high-dose chemotherapy and an autologous hematopoietic stem cell rescue. And so these three trials had slightly different designs, but all three randomized patients upfront, one-to-one CAR-T and the second-line treatment. Some of those differences in study design, I think, are important to recognize as we think about the results. In ZUMA-7, patients were randomized right at the time of recognition that they needed second-line therapy, and they either got CAR-T cell therapy, couldn't get chemo, or they went on to get that second-line chemotherapy. In contrast, in the two other studies, in the BELINDA and the TRANSFORM study, patients were randomized. If they were randomized to CAR-T, they could get a bridging chemotherapy, which is very similar to if they'd been randomized to standard of care. And because of that, that led to some differences in interpretation of the results. But overall, we're very excited about the results because two of those three studies show that CAR-T cell therapy has better event-free survival than the standard of care. But it is interesting that one of the three, the third BELINDA study, testing out tisagen lecleucel, did not meet the statistical endpoint, and in fact, the event-free survival results are the same between the two arms. And so there's potential reasons for that in the study design or maybe in the CAR-T cell therapy and its activity. But overall, it's really exciting that in the second line, we're seeing amazing results with CAR-T cell therapy as compared to the standard of care.
All right. Do you think that the number of days between the randomization to the administration of the CAR-T therapy made a difference? Because in BELINDA, it was twice as long.
It's a really important factor, and for multiple reasons. The first one is just how fast can it be made, right? And in general, we know that axi-cel or axicabtagene ciloleucel tested in ZUMA-7 can be made a little bit faster than tisagen lecleucel, which takes a little bit longer. That being said, I don't think it was the manufacturing period that really made the difference. I think that the cells are shipped internationally, and I think what may have made a difference is the allowance for bridging chemotherapy, because if you start a line of chemotherapy, you have to let that go run its course and the patient has to recover and then you infuse the cells. And then the third part of that is, when are you doing your disease assessments? Because when you have a randomized trial, you do the disease assessments from the time of randomization. And if you have fixed scheduling of imaging at, let's say, 56 days or 6 weeks, and you haven't even given the CAR T-cell therapy yet, that can impact your response rate and your interpretation of the results. And I think that was part of the impact on the Belinda trial, is that the median day to infusion, I think, was 56 days for Belinda. It was 29 days for the ZUMA-7 trial. So clearly, those differences may have impacted some of the results.
Do you think the difference in lymphodepletion could also have made an impact?
I do. I think the amount of lymphodepletion is clearly impacts the degree of expansion of CAR T cells or other adoptively transferred T cells, and the doses of fludarabine and cyclophosphamide are different for tisagen lecleucel as compared to axicabtagene ciloleucel and even lisocabtagene maraleucel. And I think that in and of itself probably impacts the efficacy of tisagen lecleucel. Mm-hmm. And that sort of brings up the other point, is that tisagen lecleucel, or because of the lymphodepletion, does it not quite have the same efficacy as the other two? And I think that's a question we have to ask and tackle as we look at these results.
We next wanted to know whether these three experts could share their experiences with regard to patient selection.
In general, I think, for example, age is not really a factor. So if anything, if you look at the phase 2 trials, but also in phase 3 trials, the patients over 65 certainly didn't do worse, maybe even a little bit better. And we don't know whether that's the biology of the disease or other factors are important. So I don't think there should be an upper limit of age. But of course, we do look at the patient, whether the patient is fit enough, has reasonable cardiac function, kidney function, is fit enough to go through an intensive treatment trajectory. But otherwise, the thing I struggle with most is patients who have very rapidly progressive disease, where the LDH is doubling every day, and you're just afraid that they won't make it, even if it's only 3 weeks until the cells are back. How do you perceive that?
Yeah. So my impression is that the efficacy of CAR T-cell therapy in the third line, and likely in the second line, at least with autologous CAR T-cell therapies that are available, is impacted primarily by two, at least, clinical features. One is the size of the tumor, and in related to that, how rapidly it's growing. Yeah. And the other is sort of a general inflammatory state, also related to how fast the tumor is growing. And I think that inflammation impacts the T-cell function and also potentially can be involved in myeloid cell suppression of the T-cells. So we're very careful in patients with rapidly progressive disease because they're most likely to have high toxicities and least likely to have good efficacy outcomes. And so if we can give them a therapy to cool them down, we try, but it's tough in large B-cell lymphoma sometimes.
Yeah, so performance status is another very important factor, but of course that's also related to tumor bulk, and none of these factors are really independent. So I think in general, the whole idea is that you have to have a very good connection with your referral centers, so that the patients who are primary refractory are identified early, so that if you can go to second line or third line, you already know those patients, and if they are candidate for CAR T-cell therapy, that they are referred in a timely fashion. Yes, that's one of the important success factors.
I think this is very important for clinicians that are listening to us. This is the fact that with this new form of available therapy already approved in the third line setting, when you see a patient with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that is going to relapse, you have to think that CAR T-cell will be in options for many of these patients. And this is already the case with third line therapy. And if these products are approved in second line of therapy in the next few months or years, this will be an even more urgent question to have a very close collaboration between the physicians that see this patient initially, manage this patient initially, and the treatment centers, which will at this time remain specialized treatment, because not only you have to apherese the patient, but you have to infuse the patient after lymphodepleting chemotherapy, but also to manage a couple of side effects which are quite specific for CAR T, cytokine release syndrome, and sometimes neurological events. And some patients may need to be hospitalized either because of the age or because some products are associated with a higher rate of these complications. So we need to have this connection extremely fast to be able to offer to our patients this new form of therapy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And to seize on both of those points, I mean, the center that does the CAR T-cell therapy should be the place where the decision is made if the patient is eligible, because age alone is not a reason to not refer a patient for CAR T-cell therapy. And it, the patient has to be sent early so that we can get things lined up and offer this potentially life-saving therapy to our patients. So it's really critical.
Yeah, so there's a window of opportunity and you don't want to miss it. What do you think about the patients with CNS involvement?
Patients with CNS involvement were allowed in some of the trials, not in other of the trials. We've treated patients with CNS involvement. What's key for us is that there's not, you know, changing symptomatology at the time we treat the patient. But we've seen responses in patients with CNS disease or previously treated CNS disease, and so that doesn't stop us. But we're always careful in evaluating patients to see if it can be safe. It'd be nice if we had some trials in CNS lymphoma, in particular primary CNS lymphoma. And that's something that hopefully the CAR T-cell therapy sponsors and manufacturers are willing to support, because there's really an unmet need there.
Absolutely, yeah.
What about Asian patients or patients outside of the clinical trial? Do we have any data that we can comment on?
Well, the reality is that, at least in the United States, when we enroll patients on clinical trials, there's barriers to enrollment. Patients who are minorities or of different socioeconomic status, and that's universal for clinical trial enrollment, not just for lymphoma patients or for CAR T-cell therapy, quite frankly. And these global international trials, there are some sites that are in Asia, and in fact, in the CIBMTR, Real World Evidence Post-Approval Safety Study, there's an ongoing analysis of Asian patients to kind of take a look at that specific patient population, because it's important to understand that this therapy works for different populations and, you know, help us get it approved in other countries. And then finally, I'll just say, you know, we need to work harder as a community at large to make sure that we enroll patients who are representative of the patient population at large onto clinical trials.
Professor Bishop also had a few comments to make about the various factors that may influence clinical outcomes.
I think the biology of the disease is this is different. And the mere fact, like, if you look at what the response rates were with very aggressive, I mean, R-ICE, R-DHAP, whatever, I mean, it was low. And again, what we predicted, only 30% of patients actually had chemosensitive disease could move on to that. So I actually think biology is significantly different. And that if we can do molecular studies and other studies on it, bulk of disease was some very, very important when we're doing some analysis of that. And again, cell ratio to tumor bulk is very, very important. And as I mentioned before, I actually think lymphodepleting chemotherapy is extremely important, because not only does it provide disease control, but it actually creates the immunological niche for the homeostatic cytokines that are important to those cell expansion and proliferation. So, all of those factors, I think we can take and hopefully apply to future studies.
I then asked Professor Gilles Saul a question that's been bothering me.
And so if all this new data gets incorporated in the guidelines and we have a new second-line therapy, right, that's what we're hoping for, isn't this going to increase the demand of CAR T-cells and perhaps lengthen the amount of time for production as well? Is that going to be the real-world experience, in your opinion?
I don't think this is the case. You know, I think companies have to improve their manufacturing. They have already installed different facilities, not only in the United States, but also outside of the United States, in Europe. And I think they were prepared for that. So we do know that this is not equal to every company, and some may still have delays. And we all hope that they will pick up with these challenges. We also know that some companies are working with CAR Ts that are manufactured even faster than what we have right now. So I think it's an evolving field. This is fascinating in terms of technologies that are involved in this field. We have also new CAR Ts that are being developed, and you mentioned how the field is moving. We are seeing allogeneic CAR T, which allow to have them off the shelf to treat patients immediately. They have a high rate of response, may be comparable to the autologous. Unfortunately, the duration of response seems more limited, but they could be a bridge to another form of therapy, and that makes them interesting. And we have CAR Ts that may target two antigens to avoid some escape, or CAR Ts that are enhanced in their activity with different biological characteristics. So it's a moving field, and it's a really exciting time for all of us.
Lastly, it seemed like a great idea to find someone who could give us more of a helicopter look at things and put things in perspective. I spoke with Professor Martin Dreiling from Munich in Germany.
Well, definitely CAR T cells in first relapse in DLBCL. This is the highlight of this meeting, definitely been said. And we have three different trials with conflicting data. So the smallest trial, the TRANSFORM trial, in fact, showed clear-cut improvement of overall survival, but EFS was not very appropriately being defined. Then we have a larger trial, which is the ZUMA-7 trial, and again, clear-cut benefit of PFS and also event-free survival, but only borderline overall survival benefit. And then finally, just 5 minutes ago, there were the Belinda trial showing no difference whatsoever when it comes to PFS. So what to make out of that? A little bit confusing. And what most people would agree, yes, there's something in it. So my personal belief is CAR T cells will become standard of care in first relapse. I should clarify, all of these three studies only included patients relapsing within the first year, so the very early relapses. In later relapses, we do know that chemotherapy is more efficient, and I think these studies will come up rather quickly to prove that. Now, how to explain the different study results? Is it only compounds? Is it the study design, or is it both? Well, I think it might be both. And the reason is that in the Belinda trial, which was not showing any major difference, patients had to wait for the CAR T cells between 40 and more than 50 days. And then that might really cause the difference. In fact, patients did receive CAR T cells too late. And therefore, in both curves, you get this very steep decline. And at the very end, in fact, yes, curves split up, but then it's too late. In that way, that really the production of CAR T cells is being now also performed in Europe. And therefore, the transfer ways are much shorter. Now, in this trial, this was a different thing, and these were early days. So this is definitely going to improve. And I think, therefore, there's, yes, CAR T cells have an advantage in the early relapses. And these are exactly the patients could have predicted. I mean, this is why the study design was made up like that. The early relapses are not that much chemosensitive. There are some differences in the methods of leukapheresis, absolutely right. Do I think this is significant? I don't think so. Because there's one study, you know, which has a different production of CD4, CD8 positive cells. That's the TRANSFORM. But again, the ZUMA trial came up exactly with the same results. So I think it's more really delay of CAR T cells. This is where most people would agree. We have to do it as early as possible. Secondly, there was also, by chance, imbalances between the two study arms. And I think this just, you know, counted up for this huge difference. Chemotherapy did not help, full stop. And therefore, I already mentioned the period until CAR T cells was much longer in the Belinda trial. And I should also add up that, and that is based also on our experience in real life data, you were referring to real life data, that if we consider the efficacy of the different compounds in currently registered application, which is third line, second relapse, we do know that the Tysa, the Belinda compound, is somewhat better tolerated, but it might be also slightly less efficient. This definitely alone is not the reason, because it's also highly efficient in third line. But I think all these different things sum up just by chance that one trial is absolutely negative and the other one is clearly positive.
What about patient selection?
This is a very good question, because for me the readout is if you expect early relapses. And we can guess the likelihood based on very simple things, on IPI, on LDH routine lab values, and the gut feeling of the doctor. Watch these patients very closely, and then really contact your next CAR T center as soon as possible. Because this is what we've learned of Belinda. If you wait too long, then unfortunately, we will no more be able to help our patients.
And can you share with our listeners some of the safety issues you experienced?
This is much better tolerated than anything else, definitely much better than allotransplant, better than autologous. In fact, our first patient was 74-year-old, a lady which initially denied to get any salvage, conventional chemotherapy, because she was afraid of the side effects. Well, she tolerated this chemotherapy rather well, but did not respond. And she was our first patient of CAR T-cells and went through that like that. So I think, and she was 74, as I mentioned. So I think this is really an approach for, I have to say though, the fit elderly patient.
We are reaching the end of our time for this podcast, and I hope you learned something. We had a great series of experts that lent us their opinion and gave us their time, for which we are grateful. To summarize, it does seem that using CAR T-cells in the second line will become a reality in the coming months or year, and it's important to share experiences with that in order to provide the best care for our patients. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy. This educational activity was supported by an independent educational grant from Kite, a Gilead company.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.
Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed conference reports on all major national and international medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.